Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Tuesday, February 3rd, 2015, episode 10.45, the Super Bowl 49 recap show. My goodness, people, what a way to end one of the wackiest NFL seasons I have ever witnessed. What a play, what a game, what a week. Phoenix, Arizona was fantastic, and I hope that they get to host another Super Bowl soon, because I really enjoyed it. First off, I'll talk about a new coach in Atlanta. Johnny Football's in rehab. Josh Gordon is in trouble again. Warren Sapp becomes a good old boy. In Phoenix, Rex Ryan updates his Jets tattoo. And New England, your Patriots are Super Bowl champions once again. Congratulations. I'll talk about some of the sights and share some of the sounds around Super Bowl 49. And I will also give you my final thoughts about the final game-winning INT by Malcolm Butler. It was a great game. Congratulations, Patriots, Super Bowl 49 champions. Let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Oh, how are you all doing? Wherever in the world you are and however you are listening to this show right now, thank you very much for joining me again. I am finally at home, relaxing in the Rave Cave right now, finally back in my environment where I am no longer out on the floor of Radio Row. Although that was great, a great week. If you have not gone out to the website to check out some of the images from Super Bowl 49, the week that was, please go out there and do that. I've got a lot of cool images up, plus a lot of the interviews that I did just one-on-one. If you just want to hear the interview without listening to the whole show, you can do that. They're out there under the Super Bowl 49 navigation tab. There's Super Bowl interviews. Check them out. There's some pretty cool interviews up there. But the pictures are pretty cool as well. I've just updated some. The final banner with all of the signatures, you can look at that image and then look at all of the people on the list who signed the board. That was pretty cool. I was really impressed that I remembered, since I was out there by myself, to get them all to sign the board after they did an interview or as they walked by. It was cool to have some players just kind of sign, even though I didn't get a chance to interview him. That was good stuff. It was a good week. I want to thank Danny and Alex, the two brothers out there in Arizona, friends of my nephew who came out on Thursday and Friday to help me kind of take pictures and set up interviews and stuff. That was pretty cool because those last 2 days were pretty busy, and without their help, I would have probably gone crazy. So let's get started. We'll start first with NFL news, and in that NFL news, the Atlanta Falcons have a new head coach. Welcome to Dan Quinn, and congratulations. Dan Quinn was named the Atlanta Falcons head coach. He obviously, if you don't know, just came off the Super Bowl. He's the defensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks, and he's going to bring that fiery, passionate, in-your-face, aggressive, physical coaching style to the Atlanta Falcons. His quote, he says, "I'm so fired up to be here with you guys today. I can't wait to build a similar championship environment right here in Atlanta. It starts with effort first, and that's always the thing we'll talk about," he said. He says, "We want to be really aggressive in terms of the way we attack." There you go. That's Quinn. He's there. He's pumped up. He is still feeling the pain, obviously, of losing the Super Bowl. That's going to sting for a while, especially the way they lost at the end. We'll talk about that in a minute, but congratulations to the Atlanta Falcons. Congratulations to Arthur Blank, who seems to have waited it out, and finally got his guy, and his guy now is Dan Quinn, the new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Let's move over to Cleveland, where the Browns are having all kinds of problems and all kinds of trouble with their football player. First, the day after the Super Bowl, we hear that quarterback Johnny Manziel entered a rehab voluntarily for possible dependence on alcohol. Everybody knows that Johnny Manziel was a kind of party guy coming out of college. We saw him with the money using a, you know, huge stack of $100 bills to pretending he was talking into a cell phone, saying, "I can't hear you. I'm sorry. I got too much money coming out my ears," drinking and partying it up. And you know, during the season, he was the one saying, "I'm not going to change who I am. I'm not going to change going out and partying and doing what." Well, obviously, it's caught up with him. The report is that from the Cleveland Plain Dealer that he entered the program voluntarily. He admitted to his family and to the Browns that he needed help, and he is being treated for, as they say, possible dependence on alcohol. Look, I wish the kid all the best in the world. I've told you that he was, you know, I liked him. And I thought early in the season, you know, the Cowboys didn't pull the trigger. Jerry Jones didn't take him. And at first I was a little disappointed. Then I saw that he just wasn't ready for the NFL. After by like week 6 or 7, he should have been starting. I truly believe he should have been starting. But finding out that he just wasn't as talented at the NFL level as everyone expected. And then obviously at the end of the season, we saw him get the start, and it was just disastrous for him. Now he is trying to get help, and I wish him the best. I hope he gets help, because otherwise it would just be a waste of talent. I do believe the kid has talent, but he needs to grow up. He's 22 years old. He has a Heisman Trophy, but that's not going to get it done in the NFL, and I hope that this is an eye-opener for him. He comes out of there ready to be a man and take his place as quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, and hopefully it gets him to study more play film, get in the room and learn the playbook and get ready to play quarterback. That's what he needs to do. That's what he needs to focus on right now, and we wish him all the luck with his rehab. Also coming out of Cleveland, we heard today, well, we actually heard a couple days ago, that wide receiver Josh Gordon had failed another drug test. I believe this one was alcohol-related drug test. The league came down today and lowered the hammer. Boom. Josh Gordon was suspended at least 1 year by the NFL. What that means is that he is not going to play at all in the 2015 season. Not a single down. And the NFL is also saying that just because he gets suspended 1 year doesn't mean that he will be eligible to be reinstated for the 2016 season. So he's at least 1 year suspended. He may be suspended for more than that. It all depends on how he behaves over the next year. And this is a guy who's already missed all kinds of time due to suspension. He missed, what, the first 10 games this season to suspension? It was a year, then it was reduced. He missed games previously before that. So he's been suspended a lot. And now even the Cleveland Browns are struggling. GM Ray Farmer released a statement saying, "As we have conveyed, we are disappointed to once again be at this point with Josh. Throughout his career, we have tried to assist him in getting support like we would with any member of our organization. Unfortunately, our efforts have not resonated with him. It is evident that Josh needs to make some substantial strides to live up to the positive culture we are trying to build this football team upon. Our hope is that this suspension affords Josh the opportunity to gain some clarity in determining what he wants to accomplish moving forward, and if he wants a career in the National Football League. We will have no further comment on Josh, as he will not be permitted in our facility for the duration of his suspension." And that's it. Farmer, I think, is sending not only a message to Gordon, but a message to the rest of the team, and a message to anybody else out there thinking that they want to come and play for the Cleveland Browns. Man, we tried everything with this kid. We are really trying to help him, and nothing sticks. So there you go. Josh Brown suspended at least 1 year, possibly more. It's bad, bad news there for the Cleveland Browns. I don't know what else to say. You can't, there's only so many chances a person gets. You only get a couple. You know, what is it? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And this is now, what, 3 or 4 times? So the brother is obviously not getting it. I don't know what else the Cleveland Browns and the NFL can do to get it through his head that he needs to shape up and take this and treat it as a professional job. He is obviously not making an effort to do that, and obviously the league is saying enough is enough. You're now suspended 1 year, possibly more, and when the Cleveland Brown GM comes out and says what he does in a statement, basically saying, hey, we have helped you the best that we could. We have done everything for you, and you're not doing it. You're not getting it. It's not resonating with you. It may be time for him to go. I believe, to be quite honest, even though he is so young, the brother has played his last down in the National Football League. The Cleveland Browns aren't going to continue to wait around, and I think other teams will stay away, seeing that he has just continued to violate the rules and continue to drink and drugs and all of that stuff. Just not worth it, even though he is that talented. We're going to stick with bad news, unfortunately, and this one is to big man, NFL Network's Warren Sapp.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm.
You know, he never meant no harm.
He's all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day he was born.
Warren Sapp, analyst at NFL Network, also former football player, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Oakland Raiders. You all know QB Killer. That is his name. Warren Sapp was arrested for soliciting a prostitute and assault. He was arrested in downtown Phoenix Hotel Monday morning after the Super Bowl for presumably soliciting a prostitute and then assault. The NFL Network terminated Warren Sapp's contract immediately upon hearing that. And I think that this was a situation where the NFL Network had to do that. It was one of their own. They really liked the guy. I mean, Warren Sapp is a really likable cat, but here he is, 42 years old. He was elected into the Hall of Fame in 2013. He was there for Super Bowl coverage. And basically, NFLN executives said, we just can't have our guys making negative headlines for stuff like this. I mean, this is, you know, we cannot tolerate people who get criminal allegations and create negative headlines. We just can't do it. Remember Warren Sapp back in 2012, he nearly lost his job when he tweeted some things about former Saints tight end Jeremy Shockey a couple Super Bowls ago. You know, there was an apology, not an apology, I think an allegation that he hit somebody, some women. It's just not a good situation. I don't know what he's doing. I mean, I don't know. It's Warren Sapp. If Warren Sapp, you know, I guess one thing that I got to say is, you know, we are in trouble if Warren Sapp has to go and solicit women to be with him. That's just bad. I'm not naive, okay, people? I know what happens out there in the world. It's the Super Bowl, big party. All the women are out there, and I know there's a whole bunch of escorts out there for these guys to communicate with. And they're superstars, and, you know, obviously these women are going to try and go get as much money as they can from him. But something happened. Warren Sapp didn't like it. Apparently there was a beef over money. And one thing led to another. They called the cops. The women themselves, I think, got ticketed for for obviously doing indecent stuff. But it's Warren Sapp, man. This is QB killer. They just don't have any idea how bad it is. This wasn't a sting, okay? It wasn't like it was a cop, a female cop who he tried to solicit. This was an actual escort who he was propositioning, and I guess there was a disagreement over funds, over how much money he was going to pay, and he got arrested for that. He has been released on his own recognizance, or I think maybe there might have been a bond set. I don't know exactly. But he was released, and he was allowed to return to his home in Florida. He'll have to come back and go through the whole legal procedure, but the NFL Network just said enough is enough, Warren, and they have outright released him and terminated his contract. I feel bad for the guy because the guy's he's got bills to pay, and I don't think he was making all that much money. But there you go. The crazy thing now is that Warren Sapp, who's been released, a lot of people are coming out and and just being downright mean over this. Jeremy Shockey, especially, had some interesting tweets to go along with the news that Warren Sapp was arrested for soliciting a prostitute. Just bad. It really is. Eric Weddle, who is a safety for the San Diego Chargers, apparently had some very interesting things to say. Warren Sapp had kind of made a joke about Eric Weddle, saying that he gets $8 million a year and Sapp couldn't pick out a safety out of a lineup. So Eric Weddle retweeted that and then said, "Thank you for the motivation for the last 4 years, E. Really appreciate it. # who's in the lineup now." So there you go. Guys having fun at Warren Sapp's expense. Not good, but it's also not good that Warren Sapp put himself in that predicament and just kind of tarnished a Hall of Fame career legacy that he had built, and it's just not going to be very good for Warren Sapp coming out of there. Anyways, NFL Network, if you're listening, I'm available, and I stay out of trouble. So give me a call. I would love to come work for you guys and do some NFL analyst work on the NFLN. All right, we'll move on before we get to the New England Patriots, who once again are Super Bowl champions for the fourth time. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Hold on, not just yet. We're not going to the Super Bowl. One more kind of crazy story to talk about. Rex Ryan, man, I tell you, I love this head coach. Rex Ryan got a tattoo. I think you all remember. And the tattoo is of what appears to be his wife wearing a then Mark Sanchez jersey, scantily clad with the jersey. Let's just put it that way to say it nice. And pretty nice tattoo. I mean, as far as tattoos go, I don't know if I'd get that done. But, you know, it's Rex. He's cool. So it turns out that Rex Ryan decided that he needed to update his tattoo. Obviously, the tattoo with his wife wearing the Sanchez jersey was in Jets green. So he needed to update the tattoo to get Buffalo Bills blue. So there's a picture of Rex without a shirt on getting the tattoo updated. And he's basically the same tattoo. They're just coloring the jersey and changing it from green to blue. I can't make this up, people. That's really out there. If you don't believe me, go check it out. His ink, his tattoo got updated. The thing is, I hope you coach for the Buffalo Bills for the remainder of your career, because I don't think you could keep changing the color over and over and over again. I don't know how that works, but it's got to be painful, too. Ouch. Not a big fan for tattoos for that very reason. I don't like needles, and I don't know how Sexy Rexy does it. But there he is, head coach of the Buffalo Bills, Rex Ryan, updating his tattoo to get Buffalo Bills blue. And now what you've all been waiting for, folks, Super Bowl 49. Now, before I go on to discussion about Super Bowl 49 and the records that Tom Brady broke and the record ratings for the Super Bowl, 114.4 million viewers, becoming the most watched telecast in U.S. history, I will leave you with this one quote for all you Seattle Seahawks fans of Robert Frost. He says, in three words, I can sum up everything I've learned about life. It goes on. So there you go. It goes on. And, you know, Russell Wilson has gone on. He said that he's going to go and report to Texas Rangers spring training, go play some baseball. That's how he's going to try and get the, what happened there on the final play out of his head. But we'll start Super Bowl 49. As I said, 114.4 million viewers, the most watched telecast in U.S. history. It tops the previous record of 112.2 million set in last year's Super Bowl. At one point near the end of the fourth quarter, as the game was coming to an end, that number rose to about 120 million in the U.S. alone. Simply unbelievable, incredible. It delivered a 49.7 rating. 49.7. That's almost 50. That's almost a 50 rating. It means half the TVs in this country were tuned in to the Super Bowl at one time or another. That's the highest overnight rating for any Super Bowl in the history of Super Bowls, and it's up 4% from last year's Super Bowl. It pulled up a last year's pulled a 47.6 rating. Just simply amazing. Incredible that with all the stuff that happened in the NFL this year and people saying that they'll stop watching, nobody stopped watching. Even more people stopped watching. Just simply incredible. NBC, just they loved it. They loved it, and I love it because I currently work for NBC Universal in a different capacity, and that just means that if they're doing good, I'm doing good. Okay, so there you go. Let's relive a little bit of Super Bowl 49, New England Patriots, Seattle Seahawks. Oh, my goodness. It all started, and it was not looking pretty. 0-0 after one quarter. The only thing happened in the first quarter was that the New England Patriots went on a pretty impressive drive, marched all the way down the field on their opening drive, then boom, interception in the end zone. Tom Brady throws a pick. Jeremy Lane picks it off. The only bad thing that came out of that is that Lane broke his arm, unfortunately, on that particular play. His arm kind of buckled up underneath him as he was going to the ground, and that took him out of the game for the rest of the game. It actually kind of helped New England, I'm not going to lie. It really did because the guy that came in, Simon, came in for Lane, just kind of got used and abused the entire rest of the night up until he did have a couple good plays in there, but for the most part, he was getting eaten up alive. That interception, which was negative for the Patriots at the time, actually turned out to become a positive because it got Lane out of the middle of the field, and all those crossing routes then became pretty much available for Tom Brady, and he was throwing them at will. Now, second quarter comes along. Patriots strike first. Tom Brady to Brandon LaFell. Touchdown. Boom. The Seattle Seahawks there were like, you know what? We are not to be denied a big bomb to guy who comes out of nowhere. Chris Matthews catches a big bomb, sets up the Seattle Seahawks in short distance inside the red zone. Marshawn Lynch, three-yard run. Boom, we got a tie ball game, 7-7. New England then takes the ensuing drive, marches down the field. Tom Brady hits Rob Gronkowski with a 22-yard touchdown pass in the back of the end zone. 14-7. And it thinks like, man, we're going to halftime 14-7, 31 seconds left on the clock, and that's going to be their half. But Seattle is able to put together a five-play, 80-yard play. I'm sorry, five plays, 80-yard drive that took 29 seconds. A bonehead penalty by the New England Patriots got the Seattle Seahawks to the 11-yard line with 6 seconds left. A lot of coaches there would have just kicked the field goal and been happy to go down 14-10 at half. Not Coach Pete Carroll. He decided to go for it. They throw it up to Chris Matthews. He catches the 11-yarder up high. Touchdown, 14-14. We go to halftime, and it's all tied up, and people are like, what just happened? I turned around for 2 seconds because I was getting ready for Katy Perry, and the next it was 14-7, and I turned to get a beer, and I drank it, and I came back, and it's, what happened? That's how quickly the Seattle Seahawks scored on that final drive right before the half. It was pretty impressive, and it was 14-14 at the half. So at this point, we've got a really good ball game going. It's 14-14, and then the halftime show. And I'm not going to lie here for a second. I became a huge Katy Perry fan. And this was before the Super Bowl, before it was ever announced that she was going to play the Super Bowl. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm actually going to play the song that made me become a Katy Perry fan. All right? So this is Firework. I think you all know the song. It was her finale.
Do you ever
during
feel
Super Bowl halftime.
Like a plastic bag drifting through the wind, wanting to start again? Do you ever feel
Katy Perry.
Feel so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Do you ever feel already buried deep, 6 feet under screens, but no one seems to hear a thing? Do you know that there's still a chance for you? Cause there's a spark in you. You just gotta ignite the light and let
it, girl.
It shine just on the night, like the 4th of July. Cause baby, you're a firework.
All right, I know a whole bunch of this.
Firework.
Guys who listen to the show are gonna, okay, enough, people. I'm just going to let it play down here below. I want to talk over it. So I'll tell you when I became a Katy Perry fan. So you all know that I've got kids. And one of the favorite movies that Emma and myself like to watch is Madagascar. You know, with the lion, Alex the lion. Chris Rock does the voice of the zebra, Marty. And David Schwimmer's the giraffe. And Will Smith's wife is Jada's the hippo, Gloria. And so the third movie that they did, Madagascar, Europe's Most Wanted, where they're like getting chased around, and they joined the circus. And when they finally do this circus with just these animals, this is the song that they perform to. Alex the Lion. As a trapezomenkana. And it's just so awesome visually to watch this animated lion, this tiger, to this song. Became a big fan of Katy Perry. I'm not going to lie. So I was really excited, and I was wondering whether she was going to sing this song or not. Because it's, you know, it's her favorite. I'm like, it's one of her famous ones. And I was like, I don't know if she's going to play it. When she got on that stage to sing this song, and she hooked into that star, which I knew was going to fly around the stadium, I was like, this is going to be awesome, folks. Watch this. Everybody around me was like, what are you talking about? I was like, she's about to fly around the stadium. And she gets lifted up, and the fireworks start shooting, and she starts flashing across. I was like, it was awesome. And it immediately reminded me of Madagascar. So here I am, this grown man at the Super Bowl. Things are going great. She's up in the sky. I'm like saying, oh my God, please don't fall. And I'm reminded of a kiddie movie that I watched with my child as she's flying around the stadium. It was great. I loved it. So that was Katy Perry fireworks. The halftime show was amazing. Missy Elliott coming out, doing her little rap right there. That was pretty cool. Lenny Kravitz, who my daughter Elena, because we watched The Hunger Games, and he has played the role of Senna in those movies. She's like, it's Senna. And I'm like, it's not Senna, honey. It's Lenny Kravitz. And he was jamming on the guitar. It was just a very, very awesome performance. The visuals on the floor with the circle, I don't know if you could really, if it came across on TV. I hope it did. It looked awesome there, live and amazing, and all the lights. And you know, she got me. I fell for the banana in the tailpipe, because in the press conference on Thursday, she said there was going to be a lion and sharks, and I'm like saying, what? And there's a lion and a shark? How's she going to do that? How's she going to pull that off? And of course, we all know, you know, the lion was this big mechanical lion that was being moved by people, and she was on it. And I was a little confused by that, because she was on the lion, but she's singing, you know, she's got the eye of the tiger. So I didn't know how that was going to work out. And then she brings out these kind of like sharks, which the left shark apparently has become famous because he outdanced the right shark. I wasn't paying. Trust me, guys, Katy Perry was on the stage wearing a little itty bitty skirt. I didn't see the freaking sharks at all, okay? Because all I was focused on was Katy freaking Perry, all right? So for everybody who's getting their kicks with the left shark and the right shark, good on ya. I was looking at Katy. That's all I was looking at, and that's, okay, enough about that. Just to say, halftime show of the five Super Bowls that I've been to live over the last five seasons, definitely the best one. Absolutely amazing. She rocked the house. I don't care what anybody says and says, I hate her music and she doesn't sing and whatever. You know what? It was a cool show. And if you were live, you'd probably be saying the same thing. All right. Enough about halftime. I spent too much time with that already, but I did want to play Katy Perry's Firework because, you know, the circus, the afro. That's Marty, in case you didn't know, from Madagascar. Back to the second half. Here come the Seahawks. And all of a sudden, to me, it appeared as if the Seattle Seahawks came out in the second half with a different agenda. They were just coming out harder. They were playing more physical, and they were dominating. And the next thing you know, boom, boom, 10 points. In the third quarter, they take a 10-point lead. It's 24-14. And I was like, good night. Now, I got to give the New England Patriots credit. There were a couple times there where the game could have got out of control. It could have gotten, you know, seriously, it could have been the blowout that I thought, that I predicted, and that I thought was going to happen. Now, there are three plays that are critical. That first opening drive where the Seahawks were just driving, 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 looks like they were going to get a touchdown. Instead, they had to settle for a field goal because Rob Ninkovich made a great play on Marshawn Lynch, stopped him on third and one. They had to kick a field goal, and instead of going up 21-14, they were only up 17-14. But then they did come back and score a touchdown, make it 24-14. Here's the interesting play. There's actually two plays that killed Seattle. The first one, I believe it was Baldwin who's streaking across the field. And the defender, and I, without seeing the game again, I couldn't tell you who the, which the defender was, tripped for New England. And as he's falling to the ground, he reaches out and trips Baldwin. And the refs didn't call that flag. I mean, Chris Collinsworth was in my ear. I had the feed, the news, the TV feed of the game. And Collinsworth went ballistic, said, how could you not call that? And I saw it. And I'm like, I know exactly what he's talking about. Because I was like, I guess it's okay to just reach out and trip people now in the NFL. That should have been called. That was a critical one because it would have turned a third down into a first down and would have extended the drive for Seattle. Next, near the end of that third quarter, going into the fourth quarter, it's third and about nine. And Russell Wilson throws a beautiful pass with great touch to Kearse. And hits Kearse right in the hands over the defender, Looks like Kearse is going to catch it and come down with a big 20-yard gain. It's going to be a first down. He drops it. Flat out dropped it. And it was like, man, oh, man, that is not good. That was kind of momentum changing. Here comes the fourth quarter. Patriots march down the field. 80 yards, boom, touchdown, make it 24-21. And it's like the Seattle Seahawks need to score right here. They get a little drive going, and then all of a sudden third down. Ninkovich again. You got to keep saying that name, Rob Ninkovich, with the big sack of Russell Wilson to force the Seattle Seahawks to punt again. They kick the ball away, and then Tom Brady takes the New England Patriots, marches them down the field, another 80-yard drive. This one culminates with a touchdown pass to Julian Edelman. Now, I won't even get started on me thinking that Edelman shouldn't have been on the football field. By this point, Averill of the Seattle Seahawks has been removed from the game due to a concussion. And earlier in that in the second half, I believe Edelman took a shot that he should have taken, gone through the concussion protocol. He looked woozy. He looked wobbly. Yet he was on the field the entire rest of the game. And I am positive that he took a huge shot. Well, actually, I know I'm positive. I saw the shot. I mean, the shot helmet to helmet was crazy. The fact that he wasn't taken off the field and gone through the concussion protocol, and then after the game, when he was asked about it, all his comment was, of course, the politically correct comment by saying, I'm not allowed to talk about injuries. Yeah, well, it tells you something. And I just think that the NFL is going to have to look into that. If they're all talking about player safety, if Averill is out because of a concussion, someone should have checked Edelman. He goes on to score what's ultimately the game-winning touchdown late in the fourth quarter when Edelman catches a 3-yard pass from Tom Brady to make it 28-24. All right. 2 minutes, 2 seconds left. Seattle's got the ball. They're driving. A couple of pretty big plays right off the bat before the two-minute warning. Russell Wilson hits Marshawn Lynch for 31 yards, and they're already at midfield. They're at basically the Patriots' 49-yard line. You're saying to yourself, wow, this is it. 31 yards, boom. Two-minute warning. They come out of the two-minute warning. They throw it deep to Javon Kearse. I don't know why they wanted to go deep there, but they did. Second down, they go deep again. And this was to Matthews. And I thought Matthews had a shot on it. Browner was on him at the time. Browner was able to knock it down. Matthews couldn't make the catch. Third down. Third and 10. Here we go. Wilson hits Lockett for an 11-yard gain. Gets a first down. First and 10 from the New England 38. Is that the crazy pass. Javon Kearse makes it from his back. It's bobbling around. It never hits the ground, and he catches it. And he gets knocked out at the New England 5-yard line. And at this point, there's a minute 6 left. Seattle calls a timeout at that point. They're second. 1:06 left, and they're at the 5. First down, handed to Marshawn Lynch. He gains 4 yards, gets him to the 1-yard line. Tick, 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 tick. Time is running down. Clock is moving. Nobody's calling a timeout. Seattle's keeping their third one in their back pocket. Bill Belichick and the Patriots aren't calling a timeout. Here comes the crucial play. 26 seconds left when the ball is snapped. Russell Wilson looks right and tries to throw a slant to Ricardo Lockett. Butler, from nowhere, seeming from nowhere, who, as reports are saying, was a late substitution, wasn't even on the field when Seattle was in the huddle. like a bullet to the football. Picks off the pass. Lockett doesn't even make an attempt on the ball. New England gets the interception. They fall on the 2-yard line. I think there's New England was charged with an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which basically made it half the distance to the goal, which put it back at the 1-yard line. And that was the game. And that's what everybody's talking about. Everybody right now is saying that was their football game. You have second and goal from the 1-yard line. You have Marshawn freaking Lynch, who basically just got you 4 yards. He got you from the 5 to the 4, from the 5 to the 1, got you 4 yards on the play before. Why don't you give it to him again? Pete Carroll outcoached himself. He outthought himself. He thought too much of it. Now, before everybody starts going crazy, first and foremost, the play Malcolm Butler made was phenomenal. I've seen that play at least 20 times now. And the way he cut to that football, I mean, literally right off the backs of Kearse and the other defender who were over on his side, I think it was Browner. Amazing to come right off there and get to the football literally basically before Lockett did. Lockett was like jogging. I don't really to this point still have no idea if Lockett was going full speed or not, but he needs to make that play. He needs to cut in front of the defender and either knock the ball down or make the play. It was just awful on Lockett's part. So we can complain at the play call, sure. I mean, for me personally, you know what? Here, I'm just going to tell you this. Look, Lockett, to this point, he had made 3 catches in the game. Okay, 3 catches, 59 yards, not bad. He had 5 targets, caught 3 of them. But this season, he had 11 catches. And he had 3 other catches in the other previous 2 playoff games. So going into the Super Bowl, this guy had touched the football in a football game 14 times. 14 times. You mean to tell me that even if you want to throw the ball with, which I am okay with, although I personally would have thrown a fade to the back of the end zone to Matthews, the tall guy that had been catching everything, or to Kearse, or even to Baldwin. So there, I just gave, check, I would have even thrown it to the tight end, Luke Wilson. There, I just gave you 4 names that I would have thrown it before I would have thrown it to Lockett, a guy who had only made 14 catches prior to the Super Bowl. That means that in all of the other 21 games that you had played, you had only entrusted this guy to touch the football 14 times. Yet you have the guy who had already rushed 26 times in this game and who, mind you, had over 317 touches in the regular season. Oh, and another 69, something like that, 69 touches in the playoffs. So combined, this guy almost had 380 touches overall this whole season. That's Marshawn Lynch, by the way. But that's not who you go with. You decide to throw it to Lockett, a guy who only touched it 14 times all year. That's what doesn't make sense to me. It's one of the most crucial downs and one of the biggest games for you to become back-to-back champions, which no one's done in 10 years, and only very few teams have done it before. And you're going to put it on the line with a guy that hasn't been there for you all season long. Nobody knows, and that's where you're going to throw the football. Mind you, if you look his way first and then look the other way, Marshawn Lynch is wide open in the end zone. But regardless, you hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch. You don't throw it to him. Although I probably would have thrown it to him in that play because it was perfectly executed with the exception of Lockett cutting the slant in front of Butler. That was the only problem with that play. Now, I asked Pete Carroll after the football game if it was a predetermined play. Because sometimes with, you know, only a couple minutes left in the game, you're calling two, three plays. So you get down there, Marshawn Lynch gets to the one-yard line, and you huddle up pretty quickly because time's running out. You only got one timeout left in your back pocket. You get out there, and I said, is it a predetermined play? Because I want to know, had you already said, tell me at least that you had already predetermined your very next play was going to be the pass play. You're going to go first down, you're going to run. Second down, we're going to pass. If we get it, great. If not, it's incomplete. We don't have to use our timeout. We run it again, and then we maybe call a timeout after third down so we have a fourth down play that we can set up. I can understand that if that's what you want to tell me, but no, he says no. It wasn't predetermined. The Patriots came out with big guys. We decided to spread them out with our wide receivers, and that's all. That I'm still okay with all of that. What I'm not okay with is you throwing it in the middle of the field if you knew that there were big guys there and there was going to be a whole bunch of traffic. Why not throw a fade to the back of the end zone where your guy makes the catch or nobody does? But that's all irrelevant, and I know hindsight's 50-50, and I know that people are saying, well, if he catches it and it's a touchdown, everybody says, oh, Carroll Sly, he's so great. I can't believe he made that pass. I can't believe he made that call. It's so gutsy, so passionate. It's just, no, it was wrong. It was wrong. You run it with Marshawn Lynch because the Patriots had given up 5 out of 6 touchdowns on goal to go from the one-yard line in this season. There were 6 attempts. 5 times they gave up touchdowns. Huh. I don't understand it. I don't understand why you don't give it to your beast mode. Instead, you go least mode to a guy who'd only touched the football 14 times. Do you realize that Lockett didn't even start a single game in the regular season? Not one. He played in all of them, but sparingly, and as I said, only made 11 catches in the regular season. That's who you're going to put your season on the line with? Oh, wow. But once again, I just ranted, and I went on a pretty bad rant, but you cannot understate, and I know a lot of people have been doing it, and I don't think a lot of people have been giving enough credit simply because he's an undrafted rookie that nobody's heard about, but Malcolm Butler made a sensational play. Go back, and if you watch that play, and if you can, if it's on DVR, however you got it, if you can go back and pause it 1.5 seconds after the snap. Seriously. Russell's in shotgun formation, calls Hutt, he gets the snap, pause it. Once the ball's in Russell's hand, pause it. You'll see that Curse has been kind of blocked up by the defender right in front of him. Butler is a good 3 yards in the end zone. And Ricardo Lockett is just barely starting to make his break for the slant. Basically, it is a race to the spot where the football is going to be delivered. And Lockett lost. Lockett lost. Why? Because you put your season and your trust and your faith on a guy who had no business being placed in that situation. And I know that Russell Wilson says when he saw it and when he let the ball go, he thought it was a touchdown. But he didn't anticipate Butler being that fast. And he didn't anticipate Lockett lollygagging it to the football, because that's exactly what Lockett did. Interception, and then there was fisticuffs and fighting, and Irvin got disqualified for throwing punches, although I'm not sure why Gronkowski didn't get disqualified. He threw a couple of haymakers himself. He even admitted as much. He's like, last game of the season, what's going to happen? Hey, I'll throw some haymakers. Screw it. Let me throw haymakers. You know, and he threw some punches. I could tell from where he was sitting. He should have been disqualified as well. And that's it. End of the game. There's only 18 seconds left at that point. The false start, though, I think the officials kind of let the center get away with multiple head bobs. I know as a center, you are allowed to put your head down to look back in between your legs to look at your quarterback. What you're not allowed to do is bob your head up and down like a chicken. Basically, that's what he did multiple times, and that caused the false start. And I think the refs kind of let them go a little bit. But the refs let all the players go. I mean, they let a lot of stuff happen in the Super Bowl, which once again, I will just make the point one more time. I hope the NFL listens. I hope somebody at the NFL listens. If you're going to be talking about what all these rules that we're going to be enforcing in the preseason, and you call the preseason like mad, flag, 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 and then all of a sudden it comes to the end of the Super Bowl and you let it go and let them play, I don't understand that. I really don't. To me, if it's a penalty in the first quarter of a preseason game, it's a penalty in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. That's the way they've got the ref. And right now, friends, they are not reffing like that. They're not. The Super Bowl is reffed completely different than the rest of the playoffs. The playoffs are reffed completely different than the regular season. The regular season's reffed completely different than the preseason. And I don't get that at all. I don't understand why the NFL cannot just say, these are the rules, these are how we're going to call it, and then be consistent and call it that way every single time. Once again, hat tip to Butler. That was one heck of a throw. Hat tip to Tom Brady, who broke all kinds of crazy records. I think his 20 completions in the first half were the most ever in Super Bowl history for a half. I think the attempts, because he attempted, I don't know, a whole bunch of attempts. I'm looking at that. I'm looking for that number right now. Please be patient with me. 50 attempts in the Super Bowl. I think that was the record. He now, for the career, has the most touchdowns than any other quarterback in history. Just simply impressive. Passed Joe Montana for that. And Tom Brady won his third Super Bowl MVP. It's just huge. Huge. Ninkovich, I think, could also have been, like I said, he was a part of some really, really, really big plays. And I think Tom Brady is giving his Super Bowl MVP truck. I think there are reports out there that he's going to give it to Butler. And trust me, Butler deserves it. That play, once again, to make that interception, simply amazing. 28-24, the final of Super Bowl 49. Congratulations to the New England Patriots. We'll get ready in a couple of weeks. I'm going to take some time off. In a couple of weeks, I'll be back with the Ravies show to put a bow and seal up the 2014-2015 season and get ready. And as I said and I tweeted earlier out today, in honor of the New England Patriots and the New England Patriots winning the Super Bowl, I said, in their honor, I'll just say, I'm on to the NFL Combine. That's the next NFL event coming up in a couple of weeks. And then after the Combine, we have the draft and then training camps, mini camps, training camps, and we'll do it all over again. Hopefully, I will continue to do the show. I'm going to put it out there for the fans, see what the fans think, whether they continue to listen or not. This was a very different season, obviously, with just myself, and I had some guests in from time to time. I will continue to try and do that for you next year, if at all possible. I had a great time. The Super Bowl was awesome. Great week. If you have not seen any of the interviews or heard any of the shows from Radio Row, make sure you check them out. They were a lot of fun. I think I was very impressed with Deontay Wilder, the current WBC heavyweight champion. Pretty cool dude. I may start watching some boxing because of him. Again, I've been put off by the boxing world. He might very well bring me back. That's all the time I've got. Thank you very much for listening. And I am going to be getting out of here in just a moment. But before I do, I just want to leave you with a little bit of this. Yeah, she was rad, folks. She really was.
Do you ever feel like a plastic bag?
One of the best halftime performances at a Super Bowl. I've been Steven Miranda for myself and all the other guests that have been on the show during this season. We thank you very much for listening. Congratulations to the New England Patriots. And I can't wait. Next season, I just wanted to start already. 6 months, people. 6 months before we get meaningful football again. But you know what? I just want you all to celebrate like it's the 4th of July, okay? Because you are all fireworks. Every single one of you. Except for Katie. You threw some jabs at me that, you know, I'm still a little wounded. I'm a little wounded, Katie. Not Perry. You know which Katie I'm talking about. I'm Steven Miranda, folks. You've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.